Welcome back to season 3 of Snubs and Dubs. We've been talking about the snubs and dubs of the 74th Academy Award for Best Picture. I'm your host, Kyle Tobiasen, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jason Miller. Jason, how's it going today?
Kyle, in a word, cold.
Yes.
It's really cold outside.
Frigid as fuck.
I think today, at least, it hit negative 33 degrees Celsius, which in Fahrenheit is like approximately negative 33 Fahrenheit as well, because I know they meet up at minus 40, but I don't know how much the difference is, so like, ballpark.
Yeah.
It's cold. That's the main takeaway. We don't need numbers to tell us that.
And it was also slightly windy, so yeah, that made it even worse.
Just the worst. But how are you doing, Kyle?
I'm good. I've been staying inside, away from the cold, except for the times that I did go outside, which is actually quite a few. I actually
that's
been
how
outside.
That works.
Yep, damn it.
You're either inside or you're outside in this world.
Yeah. Did you watch anything in the last week?
Well, we've been doing some casual Christmas watching.
Okay.
And I say casual because I've been in and out of three or four different movies, but have not start to finish watched anything.
Okay.
One I fell asleep during. That was The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, the Jim Carrey one.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a classic, great movie. Mm-hmm. The part where the Grinch gets bullied as a kid, that used to make me really sad, but now it's like, you know what? He is weird. So I get that one now. I think the kids are justified.
Okay.
What else did I watch? There was that Lindsay Lohan Christmas movie, Falling for Christmas or something like that.
Oh, this is a new one, I think. I haven't heard
yes.
that one.
It's fine. Slight spoiler alert.
Okay.
I'm dropping right now. If you it's not even a spoiler. You know the two love interests kiss at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But what you may not know is the woman kissing the male love interest, not Lindsay Lohan, she had a stand-in to kiss him.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which is interesting. I don't know why. We tried to find out and we couldn't get a good answer. So that remains unsolved. But if you know why Lindsay Lohan refused to kiss that guy, please DM me. I'm kind of curious.
Yeah.
Other than that, I also watched most of A Muppet's Christmas Tale, but I had to leave before it finished. So
damn.
I got to the part where Tiny Tim died and didn't get the happy ending that I know is coming. So sorry, Tiny Tim. I'll try and finish your story one day. Yeah.
That's a good one. Christmas Carol, right? The Muppets Christmas Carol?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay, okay. Because I know there's another Muppets Christmas that's just like A Muppets Christmas or something.
I probably, yeah,
I haven't heard
got
of that one.
Up. But yeah. The classic.
That's
how about you,
one.
Kyle? What you been watching?
I've been watching a little bit. I have been watching Rick and Morty. I've been kind of keeping up with it, and the season just wrapped. Overall, good season. I can't say there was anything that memorable about it, though.
That's
like
fair.
I couldn't pinpoint any episode in this season that distinguishes from like other episodes in the series so far. But like, it's still fun to put on and watch. I don't know if I'll like I could ever say season 6 was like the best season, because none of it really stood out.
So. Season 6 of anything is never the best.
Yeah.
It's the rare show is still even that enjoyable at that part. So as long as you had fun with those episodes, that is a good indicator that Rick and Morty still bring in some juice.
Yeah. You know what I just remembered? You mentioned Muppet's Christmas Carol. Did you hear that like Disney is putting in a song that was originally cut from that movie?
And no.
For ages, people have been upset about this. I watched a really good video.
Oh, was it from Defunct Land?
I don't know. It was like, I think it was Entertain the Elk who did this. And essentially, there was a song that is sung when Michael Caine goes back in time and he's seeing his wife and she has a song. And when they're singing at the end, it like brings back that same like lyric and the same like song tread, like the same like, I don't know, what's musical?
Like melody?
Melody, yeah, melody. That's what I'm going for. But like, because it was originally cut, it doesn't make sense at the end.
That's wild.
And so now but the problem was it was originally cut, and because it was cut from the original cut, it was like lost for a long time.
Oh, wow.
And so eventually they did find it, and now they're putting it back in. And so I think it might be already on there, but in Disney Plus, you can now watch like the full version with that song to make it make more sense.
Well, I don't think the version we watched had the song in
it. Okay. So it might not be yet, but
yeah. Or maybe you have to do some, it might be in a special, maybe there's an Easter egg. You got it like left, right,
maybe
down, down, up, up, whatever the thing is.
Yeah. But super interesting video. I can send it to you and I'll put it in the show notes because I did not know.
Yeah.
But I guess this was a big thing. But other than that, the other thing that I watched, other than another movie that I had already watched, Avatar, I saw Avatar again, was Gattaca. Have you ever heard of Gattaca?
I've never heard of Gattaca.
It's like a late 90s sci-fi movie with Ethan Hawke and Jude Law and Uma Thurman.
It sounds like a skin disease.
Well, it's funny you say that because the entire movie was about like your genetic build and like how even at birth, how your genetics are determines how well you'll do in life, essentially.
Oh.
And so it's advisable for parents to basically have biologists mess with your child's DNA before they're even like conceived. Mm-hmm. And like they do like in vitro, I think it's in vitro, like where they do it basically a test tube baby.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like they mess with the egg and the sperm to make it like basically an ideal version of that child.
Oh, hell yeah.
To like get rid of all diseases and that sort of thing. And so natural birth is frowned upon because they're like not basically predisposed to success and will have like diseases that like are just like naturally caused, but like they can remove that now.
Yeah.
And so Ethan Hawke's character was naturally born and he had like a 90% chance of developing a heart condition by the time he was 30-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And so he gets to about that age, but he's still like trying to fight against the system that's in place because not only is like birth that controlled, but the workplace is controlled in that matter too, wherein like your interview for a job will be a blood test and they'll see your potential to make sure that you're right for the job and that'll be it.
Oh, wow.
And so like he basically does like a scheme with Jude Law because Jude Law's character is one of these people that is perfectly genetically predisposed to be a success.
You seen Jude Law? Yeah.
But I won't give it away because it's really cool. But like he has like a reason why he doesn't want to or he can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And so Ethan Hawke basically takes his identity and they do things to make it so like he can get past all of these genetic tests so Ethan Hawke can succeed in like a normal way where like he's just smart and so he can succeed. But because there's those barriers in place, he couldn't even get in the door, but now he can. But then he like leaves an eyelash behind once and it gets sucked up and like then people think there's somebody like infiltrating. It's very fascinating.
Interesting.
And the reason it's funny you said that it sounds like a skin disease is because like every morning he has to go and like scrape all of the dead skin off of his body so to not leave anything behind, like even on his keyboard or anything, like because they will check to make sure that this is the same person.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was a very interesting watch. It's sometimes a little bit slow.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of like a high concept sci-fi espionage type thing. Like I was really in the mood for it and it really worked for me. I really liked it. So
hell
I
yeah.
recommend it, Gattaca. But other than that, yeah, I like I said, I watched Avatar, The Way of Water again. Still holds up. It's a great time. Really love it. And I think I even liked it more the second time because of just I was able to take in more of the scope of the movie and like all of the visual spectacle. And I found that this time I actually found myself in more awe because I was able to stop and think like none of this is real. Everything I'm looking at, like what? There's an actor behind that.
Kyle, what?
Sorry to shatter your reality, but like there's an actor behind that, but like everything that I'm seeing is digitally created.
Mm-hmm.
And like you just don't think about that when you're just sat there and in it, like you're watching it because it's so photoreal. Mm-hmm. And I just like, it's so impressive. And I think everyone should see it. It's a great time.
I want to see it.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, I mean, I don't really care that much now that I know that it's all fake.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But yeah, other than that, I watched a movie for this episode. Of course, season 3 of Snubs and Dubs is covering the films from the year 2001. And so for episode 21, we are talking about The Man Who Wasn't There. Jason, had you seen or heard of this before?
Now, I haven't seen this before. Mm-hmm. And I have only heard of this because some other movie earlier in the season shared best director with this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't for the Oscars, of course. They don't share there. It was for a different movie award. And I don't remember that, but I remember seeing like...
I just saw this. So oh, yeah? I actually know what it is. It was for the Palme d'Or in the Cannes International Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
They shared it with Mulholland Drive with David Lynch. Right. Yeah.
Apparently the Cannes d'Or have... a particular taste.
Yeah.
But that was all I heard of it was a fun fact that I had to look up for another thing. How about you, Kyle?
I did not even know this movie existed until starting to build this season. And the only reason I know is that it was nominated for one award. We'll get to that later. And that was the only thing I saw of this movie from this year. And then further research, you find this is a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah.
And I never heard of that.
Me neither.
In their filmography before.
This is the goddamn movie that wasn't there. No one knows about this
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. And it's so weird because like, I really like the Coen Brothers. So I would think that I would maybe try to seek this one out if I had known, but like, I just had never heard of this movie before. And so it was definitely excited to watch it as a Coen Brothers movie. But if you had told me at the start of this year that we would be watching two Billy Bob movies,
yep,
I would not have believed you and probably would have stopped one of them.
I would have texted you and been like, hey, Nick's one of those. we're not doing two. That's actually in my contract. Yeah. So you are in breach and will have to pay me quite a sum of money.
Like, I don't know. Sometimes he's okay, but like, I did not think that in the three seasons we have done three movies and two of them were in the same season.
Yeah.
Like, what? It's so wacky. But also, he's like the same in this. I don't know. We'll get into it a little bit more.
We'll get to Billy Bob. Oh, we will get to him.
All right. Well, if you were interested in The Man Who Wasn't There, I've included the links to the physical media related to it in the show notes. If you buy through that link, it'll help out our show. Or if you have any other Amazon shopping to do, follow the general link to help out our show in the process. A reminder that this is going to be a spoiler-filled conversation. So if you haven't seen this movie yet and you want to, go ahead and do so. I've also included time codes in the show notes so you can skip around to your heart's desire. But without further ado, let's get into it.
The Man Who Wasn't There is a 2001 American epic satirical noir crime film. This was directed by, officially, Joel Coen, unofficially, also Ethan Coen. We know how they work. And was written by Joel and Ethan Coen. This is starring Billy Bob Thornton as Ed, Frances McDormand as Doris, Michael Badalucco as Frank, James Gandolfini as Big Dave, and Scarlett Johansson as Birdie. This has a runtime of 116 minutes and released on Halloween 2001. So Kyle, this is the third Billy Bob film. The first two, flops. Bottom of the ranking each, especially Sling Blade. We kept burying that even harder every time we could. How does the third Billy Bob installment, The Man Who Wasn't There, how does that measure up?
Well, I'd say third time's the charm because this actually worked for me. I really like this one.
Really?
Yes.
Steven Pile Crab. This movie sucks so hard.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right.
But you get, I need to ask you something.
Yes.
Could you hear what they were saying when you watched it? Like, was the sound okay?
Yeah.
I couldn't get it to sound good. I don't know what the issue was, but in my movie streaming, like normally on my TV, I'll watch things between volume like 20 to 30.
Yeah.
Will be loud. I had this on 76.
Oh my God.
And couldn't hear most of the narration that was going on.
Weird.
And also I tried to put on closed captioning because that would really tide that over.
Yeah.
On the YouTube stream we have, the closed captions are a good 20 seconds behind and entirely unusable.
Yeah. And it wasn't just you. Like, I went and confirmed it afterwards because you texted me. You were can you check? I think I'm going crazy. And it's the YouTube stream. So YouTube, sort out your closed captions for The Man Who Wasn't There, because yikes.
But I don't know how, like, I think at times I went into the 80s, but I was scared that like some noise had actually hit the right volume and my entire house would wake up as like comically like a cartoon. The top half of my house lifts off the foundation because the noise is so loud. But no, I spent a lot of time straining my ears to hear Ed Crane's narration.
Right.
So that might paint my experience watching this.
Yeah, maybe. Because like I said, I didn't have a problem with the especially the narration. Like, I think there were some times where the dialogue was a little bit lower, but I found his narration always came through pretty clearly. So maybe that is literally the difference between my enjoyment and yours, is that you could actually hear what he was saying.
Yeah. Yeah. There might be some other things too.
Maybe,
but that one, I'm not going to watch this again. Let me tell you now, but maybe it deserves a viewing where I just do it on a different device, because for some reason, this particular stream, the sound mix was atrocious.
Yeah, that's not good. But like I said, I really liked it. I think I found that the methodical pace of it was really working for me. I know it could seem slow, but I just found that maybe it was the Coens writing, and I could feel the Coens in this movie. Like, it felt like a lot of what they have done before in so many ways, where like, it is a different concept for a lot from like obviously all of their movies, but I could still feel their flavor in it. And I found that the performances, while Billy Bob is very just one note, it works. And then everyone around him is so much bigger. And I love Gandalfini in this.
Oh,
he's
course.
So fucking good. Frances McDormand doesn't get a lot to do, but in her small little moments, like, she's great.
Oh, Frances McDormand is never not perfect everything she touches.
And I just found that I was engaged like the whole way through, even though it does kind of truck along at a very constant, like a steady pace. I don't think it's not fast paced by any means. I just found I never lost interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it is steady in the way that someone pushing a car is still moving steadily. But, and I will say, this commits one of my least favorite things in any kind of movie or TV show dialogue, where one character doesn't reply to another character saying several lines at them in a conversation. I want to shut off anything that does that, because that never happens in conversation.
Yeah.
It's painful to listen to. It happens whenever anyone speaks to Ed. So this thing that I hate happens in most dialogue scenes where people just speak at Ed ad nauseum. And while some of it's for the effect of like, I'm Ed, I'm a big old grump, but I don't talk to people. A lot of it, like when James Gandolfini's talking to him about promoting Frances McDormand's character.
Yeah.
He never replies. And that's so frustrating to me. That's not how conversation works. It's just like completely ruins my suspension of belief in movies because it's just annoying to watch that happen. And it happens a lot.
That's fair. Like, that was obviously a choice because of the character himself. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Like, in a natural conversation, even if you're not interested, you might be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that would be.
And he can drop some like, you don't say, or something like that, just to make the conversation feel natural.
Yeah. But anyway, should we get into the plot?
Let's get into the plot. Right.
So I have another brief plot, quick little 1 minute plot. I'm going to read straight through it. If you don't need the refresher, you can skip right to the discussion by following the time codes in the show notes. But here's The Man Who Wasn't There. The Man Who Wasn't There is a film set in 1949 in the town of Santa Rosa, California. The protagonist, Ed Crane, is a barber who becomes embroiled in a scheme to blackmail his brother-in-law's business rival, Big Dave Brewster, whom he's suspects of having an affair with his wife, Doris. Ed collects money from Brewster by anonymously threatening to reveal the affair, but things go awry when Brewster finds out. Ed has to kill him, and when Brewster is found murdered, Doris is arrested for the crime. Ed hires a defense attorney, Freddie Riedenschneider, to represent Doris, but she ultimately hangs herself in her cell before the trial takes place. As the film progresses, Ed becomes increasingly isolated and lonely and begins to imagine a future in which he manages a musical career of a young woman named Rachel. However, his fantasy is shattered when a music teacher informs him that Rachel lacks talent. Ed's fortune takes a turn for the worse when he crashes his car while driving home from the music lesson and is subsequently arrested for murder after the body of Creighton Tolliver, the man who originally enlisted Ed's help in the blackmail scheme, is found dead with Ed's investment contract. Ed is sentenced to death, and while waiting on death row, he writes his story for a pulp magazine. Just before his execution, Ed sees a UFO outside the jailhouse and reflects on his decisions and is hoped for a reunion with Doris in the afterlife. But that's The Man Who Wasn't There.
Man, it's crazy how little you can fit into 2 hours of movie, Kyle, isn't it?
It is funny because, yeah, like the plot I have is very brief. And as I was saying to you before, there's like big events that happened, but like, it's still like a long movie. And so like, it's easy to kind of trim down this movie into its just major points. But did you think that he was going to kill somebody? Like, did you have any concept of what this movie was about before going in?
So I didn't have any ideas about what was going to be happening next. Mm-hmm. And I think they write a plot that isn't predictable.
Yeah.
Yet still not interesting. I don't know. I thought there was some interesting points, but they're just so far apart from each other with so little in between them that when they happened, I still wasn't that interested.
That's fair. I was also in the dark for this. And so I didn't know that he was going to be like a killer, like somebody that killed somebody. Mm-hmm. He seemed like a very passive character. And I thought that things would just move around him and he would just kind of be stagnant in a lot of his ways. And eventually that would either pay off in a good way for him or in a way that just like he ended up being so stagnant that he ended up in a position that was bad for him, which is the, you know, the ending that does happen. But when he kills Big Dave,
yeah,
I was a little bit surprised because I didn't know that he was actually going to like kill him. But when you have that scene happening and Big Dave tries to choke him out, of course he's going to do something. And the knife was on the table earlier, like you saw. So like when you put the knife on the table, you show a shot of it. Like obviously someone's going to get stabbed later on. And then he just walks home. And I thought for sure, well, he walks out and he drives home. And I thought for sure somebody was going to see him. and that was going to be where he was going to get arrested or something. But nope, he just gets home, and then Doris is arrested. And yeah. The one problem that I do have with this movie is the police logic is very like direct line. That's it.
Yeah.
And like the fact that they went from Doris, when they started investigating, Doris was the one who was cooking the books. And so she must be the one that kills him because they create this narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like assume that she's innocent. Like it just felt backwards. And even at the end, when Billy Bob's arrested for the murder of that sweaty guy.
Yeah.
Like it's just like his signature was on a thing. And so like, oh, he must have been the one who kills him because again, they start creating the narrative and then they just arrest him and he's now on death row.
Yeah.
That like, because of the whole situation with Doris, like makes a little bit more sense because they started putting the pieces together that maybe he was the one that was involved, blah, 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 blah. But the police logic was very backwards and not very good.
And I got that the theme with that is that, you know, life's going to screw you over. Facts don't mean what they do, but they never gave the police a reason to do the quick arrest. If they had set it up that there was, I don't know, some issue where Ed had a problem with the police chief or whatever, so the police force was out to get them, then that would all make sense why they're trying to screw his family over by just connecting them to any murder that they could. But the police had no reason to find the easy out and make these people have that difficult situation. So it just seems implausible in a way.
Yeah. I also found that it almost treaded into the problematic territory with Scarlett Johansson's character.
Almost. And then 180s in a bizarre fashion.
Yes. It did, like the whole time it seems that Ed is wanting to be with this young woman, this child, basically. She's a high schooler. And that's why he's taking such an interest in her. You know, you hear his like conversations about how he's not satisfied with Doris anymore because he knows that she's cheated on him. And then also like when they got married in the first place, it was basically on a whim. Mm-hmm. Because she was like, I think she was just looking for security or to somebody literally to
just,
marry.
Yeah,
just a man that she can have do things for her. And that was it. And like, and he's just kind of a guy that gets walked all over in that regard. Like as soon as somebody can see that they can walk all over him, I'm sure they take advantage of it. I think Doris is in that situation. And so it seemed like he was taking an interest in her somewhat romantically, but also because he liked her music. Mm-hmm. And it was just hard to read until that scene at the end where she does make a pass at him and he rejects her so like aggressively. And I thought for sure, like if she would do that to him, that he would maybe be like, okay, no, like let's, you know, no, stop. No. And then eventually something might happen. But like he adamantly is like, no, like we're not doing this. Like this is not about this. But I understand how she might have gotten that idea.
Yeah.
Because the whole way through, like he is obsessed with her in a strange way. But I'm glad they did it because that's a gross choice. But she was good in it too.
She was good.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt on that I don't know where it started, but Ed at some point just tried to vicariously want a better life for himself through her and tries to offer these opportunities. I just didn't like when she then tried to give him the roadhead.
Mm.
It seemed out of nowhere and unnecessary, and I didn't understand why.
Yeah.
And then it resulted in a car crash.
Yeah.
For some reason that also didn't actually really affect the plot at all. He was going to get arrested no matter what.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That scene, it felt, I didn't even mind that arc of Ed taking this interest in Birdie, you not necessarily knowing where it's going, but fearing the worst. And then it turns out he just truly wants to actually help her out, even if it's his own, like putting his own baggage on her.
Yeah.
And then she, I don't know, just tries to suck him off. It just feels like out of nowhere and like and a frustrating reduction of what that character could be other than just like someone who had a favor given to her. So she's going to sexually return it. And it's just like, I don't know. It takes a lot of weight out of what that relationship was.
True. And you don't get the sense, even in that scene where she's talking to that young high school boy, that she is like a sexually suppressed character in a way, or like sexually deviant in any capacity for the whole time. Like you think that she is just like a very sweet, innocent girl. And that's why he likes her so much, because she's very pure and she has this like talent that he enjoys listening to. And then like that, you're right. It does feel like such a 180 when she just comes out and it's like, oh yeah, like I want to, it's kind of odd.
But, yeah.
Okay. Well, there's one thing that we should talk about, because I think in a lot of the awards areas, this is where it got most awarded, was the cinematography.
Yeah.
Cause Roger Deakins is putting in the work here. It's black and white. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, there's some really very good, cool, interesting shots. I really love the one scene of the lawyer talking to Doris and Ed in right. the prison with like the light streaming through the bars and he's walking between them.
Yeah.
I thought that's a really cool shot. There were a bunch of other things that stood out as just interesting shots that were like visually very appealing and yeah. made the black and white feel like it had so much more going on than it did.
Mm-hmm. I can't even pinpoint one shot in particular that I really liked. Oh, there's one where he's like stepping out of the store. It looks really good. But I just found that the aesthetic really fit the vibe of the movie. It was yeah. really pretty to look at.
I also enjoyed when he was walking to the electric chair. That was a really cool shot when they opened the door and the room's just saturated in white, except yeah. for the window of people watching in the chair.
Yeah.
That weird scene where the UFOs outside or over top of the prison courtyard, also really cool. What this movie, in my opinion, could have been is like a 20-minute collection of those shots and not bother having Billy Bob Thornton speak.
Yeah. So what did you really not like about this movie then?
I found that the characters were so, like, I understand that they're meant to be uninterested, but it felt like they were angry they were in this movie. Like, there was so little dialogue. It was right. so stretched between. A lot of what's being said is the same thing over and over again, where Ed's just like annoyed at existence and other people. And in 2 hours, I got over that.
Right.
I got kind of tired of that. I think the narration in general just didn't work for me. For what I could hear, I will say, because a lot of it was also broken up by the fact that I had to strain my ears and still couldn't hear it.
Right.
It was just, it didn't add much value to the movie. He kind of just repeats himself a lot. And in different mm-hmm. scenes, he keeps saying about how he doesn't like people who speak. He'll do that multiple times during the movie, even though they show that more convincingly than him just saying those yeah. lines over top of scenes happening. But I think a lot of my issue is I just don't like the character of Ed at all. Mm. Every time he was on screen doing stuff, he annoyed me, from his lack of responding to people having a conversation at him to when he did speak. It was just being like, meh, I don't like things.
Yeah.
And that's not a convincing character that I care about, even if he's not meant to really like be the characterization of the movie.
Yeah.
It just, he doesn't want to be there. And then because of that, you know what? I don't really want to be here.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think they could have done a little bit more with him breaking out of that routine.
Yeah.
Especially when Doris is arrested, and especially after she commits suicide. Like, I think he needed to make some changes, mm-hmm. but he really doesn't. And like, you see how almost pathetic he is at the end when like Riedenschneider is like, you know, he can't afford him anymore. And so he goes to the public defender and he just like basically lets it happen.
Yeah.
He basically doesn't resist to getting into the electric chair in the end, which the ending I was surprised by, because I thought that he might be able to fumble his way into mild success, or at least fumble his way into just living a very sad and boring life at the end, mm-hmm. where it's shown that he tries to make one change and he does it in such a wrong way with this like blackmail scheme
yeah.
that it goes so wrong and he ends up living with those consequences. And he does live, like, he does have consequences, you know, in the way that he gets the electric chair, but doesn't get to live with those consequences, which is what I thought would be more interesting, mm-hmm. is if he blackmailed Big Dave, got his wife arrested and resulted in her hanging herself, put the barbershop at risk of being taken by the bank, mm-hmm. and nearly kills Birdie.
Yeah.
And the slimy guy is killed and like he makes that bad business decision. And so like nothing works out for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought because nothing's worked out, he wouldn't die. I
yeah.
thought, because like that would have been, in my opinion, a more impactful ending. I didn't really love the ending because I thought it would have been better if he was just done at home. Like he was just at home at the
yeah.
end alone with like all of the consequences of his actions living around him. Birdie probably doesn't want to talk to him anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The barbershop might go under. Like everything is bad about around him after this one decision. But because like through the movie, he doesn't like make consecutive more decisions to like really propel his departure from the norm.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it seems a little bit stagnant.
Yeah.
But then I also really liked that. I didn't dislike Ed. I disliked him in the way that the movie wants you to dislike him,
mm-hmm.
in that he is like very boring and not a very great guy in a lot of ways. But then I kind of wanted to see his downfall in a very way. And I also thought it would be fun if that guy disappears, the guy with the dry cleaning business disappears, and suddenly one day Ed's just like making money.
Yeah.
And like, he can't really explain it because the guy followed through, but because Big Dave found out and killed him, that doesn't happen. So
yeah, we don't even necessarily know if it was a mistake to give him that investment money, because the guy gets killed before he could open up anything.
Yeah.
The only like real mistake that sets off this chain, other than I guess blackmailing, morally probably not great.
Yeah.
Was that he asked for the exact amount of money that was needed. If he had like asked for 12,000 instead.
Yeah.
Like Big Dave never would have caught on and he would have been fine.
Yeah. That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. I also thought like a fun ending would have been if after, like, as you said, you know, crashes the car, Bree doesn't want to speak to him.
Yeah.
His wife's dead. It would be kind of funny if the bank foreclosed on the haircutting business and then like a dry cleaning business bought the building and opened up in that place.
And he just ends up working at like a dry cleaner's.
Yeah. Like how, that like, would be, I think that would
that
be
would
fun.
Have been a fun ending. Yeah. I did like the movie, and I think I'm just matching your tone because there are things that I didn't like about it. Mm-hmm. But the ending is something that I do think could have been a little bit better, because I know that they wanted to have this like UFO ending and he's like thinking about his actions, and then it's framed that the whole movie he's been writing this story for a men's health magazine so he can get some money. I don't know what for.
I don't know what he needs money for. It's not like he even has an estate to give away. Like,
yeah.
No one he knows who cares about him is still alive.
Yeah. And then he just dies. It's just kind of disappointing in that regard. But otherwise, like, I thought that the characters were all really well fleshed out. Like, Frances McDormand's character is really complicated. And you can tell that she is a very, like, somewhat dominant person towards Ed because she knows she can take control of him. Like, you see the scene in the bathtub where she's just like, shave my legs.
Yeah.
And he just does it. And she's like, love you, honey. And
now, granted, there is nothing I wouldn't give in this world to shave Frances McDormand's legs. I will put that out in the world right now. Doing that only for free is a privilege and it's the greatest gift you could give him.
Yeah. And then, like, I think she thought that she would get away with cheating on Ed with Big Dave, but Ed just happened to see that. And honestly, if he didn't get that business opportunity, he probably would have just let it happen.
Oh, he never would have mentioned it.
Yeah. And Big Dave is such a fun character.
I love Big Dave.
Is it James or Jim? James?
Gandalf,
I think it's James Gandolfini. Yeah. Fucking love that guy.
He's so good.
So good. I think he passed away in 2013. So rest in peace to a legend. But like, he's like perfect in this movie.
He is.
He's like that exact type of guy who is like putting on a brave face and being like the big boss man, but like he is drowning. Like he is like stumbling through, and like he married into that business. And like you find out later from the private investigator that like he was honorably just discharged because he got in a fight, and like he didn't even leave the States.
Well,
like,
dishonorably discharged. Right. Yeah.
And so like, he, all of his like war hero stuff was a lie. And so this guy is just like he's a pillar of the community, but like he's a total phony.
Yeah.
And it's just so fascinating. And I really liked Reeden Schneider.
Oh, he's a great character.
He brought a lot of energy, and it was a needed contrast to Ed.
Yeah.
Because Ed is just like the same throughout. And he just comes in there and just like starts lawyering, like doing all this law shit. And one of my favorite scenes was when Ed actually confesses. And he's like, I killed him.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives his whole story. Yeah. He like goes through it, and he's like, no, it's not any better. Like,
nah, it won't play.
It won't play. Yeah. So like, he thinks that he's just trying to take the fall for like his wife as like a story that they could give. And then he comes up with a better story. And honestly, I think if he was able to afford Reeden Schneider, he might've gotten off. But
yeah. Honestly, I think Reeden Schneider, Howard, I don't even care how you say his name. I'm good. That's close enough.
Yeah.
I don't think he even cared whether or not Ed was telling the truth or lying. It wasn't the truth about the story that mattered. It's like, either way, telling the truth, not, doesn't matter. It doesn't sell good enough, so we're not going to use it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you want to tell me what other people thought?
Well, let's do some of that. So the critics at Rotten Tomato are giving this an 81%.
That's pretty
good. Audience is slightly ahead of that with an 85%.
Yeah.
So favorable.
Mm.
IMDb is giving this a 7.5, and Metacritic is giving this a 73.
Yeah.
So kind of the same ballpark.
Yeah. I think that's pretty on par for like middle of the row Coen Brothers movies.
Yeah.
Which is like, they're either like 90s or 80s. So I think that's good for them. It's pretty on average.
Exactly.
But I also see why this movie has kind of fallen into obscurity for them, because it's not very accessible.
No. I mean, it's on a terrible YouTube stream. Don't watch that garbage.
Yeah.
In terms of box office, speaking of falling off the map, this made $21 million on a budget of $20 million.
Yikes.
Which, if my numbers are correct, that's like not much profit. No.
And it's hard to say that this movie had a lot of life afterwards because, I mean, we didn't even know it existed. And it's a Coen Brothers movie.
Yeah.
Like, jeez.
This was number 112 at the box office.
Yeah.
Yeah. This has 112 sense. Number kind of feel.
Yeah.
But time for our scores. And I can only imagine they're fiery and disagreeing. Kyle, you're going to start us off. What was your enjoyment of this dog shit movie?
I gave it a 4. I actually really had a good time. I do think that it's probably not for everybody, as you have already shown. And I do have some problems with it, but I never wavered throughout this movie. I had a really good time. And the ending is a little bit, you know, maybe that was my expectation because I thought it was going to be a different ending, but it was just... I could have preferred a different ending, but otherwise it's a 4. It's 4. It's 4.
Well, I know you misspoke, so I'm going to put you down for 0.4. For my enjoyment, I'm not going to be as harsh as that, but I'm going to give this a 1.5. Oh, God. I, by about, I think, maybe 40 minutes in, I started checking the time to see how much I had to sit out now. The pacing for me was unenjoyable. Ed was unbearable, but there were some delightful characters around that.
Yeah.
I just could not do 80% of this movie, which was the Ed Zone.
That's fair.
And now Billy Bob Thornton, to me, is one of the biggest red flags a movie can have. And I won't not see a movie because Billy Bob Thornton's in there. It's just that my expectations will lower the more he has screen time in the movie.
There's still time. This episode comes out in the new year, but for while we're recording, there's still time before Christmas for you to watch Bad Santa.
Is he in that?
He is the titular Bad Santa. So
I'll try. Okay. I'm going to make a stiff eggnog drink and I'll try. Okay. Kyle, what was your craft?
I gave this a 4. I thought it was very well crafted. A lot of talent behind the camera with Roger Deakins. The shots are impeccable. And I thought that the aesthetic of the 40s period really came off. It worked really well. So I gave it a 4.
I will also give this a 4. The theming is incredible.
Yeah.
There is a really nice score that comes through in places. Mm-hmm. The shots are really good. I don't know if I'm going to remember every part of this movie, but there's like 4 or 5 shots that are going to stick with me.
Yeah.
And in 20 years, all I'm going to remember about this movie is it's dog shit. Yeah. Billy Bob Thornton sucks. There's some great cinematography though. So that for that, I will give Kraft a 4.
That's fair.
What's your execution?
I gave this a 4 as well. I thought it was very well written and the acting in it is pretty much all around very good. I think Billy Bob is doing exactly what he was told to do. And that is a very Billy Bob performance. But for me, it worked in this because that is exactly who Ed is supposed to be. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, this is always the struggle of I don't know where to put some things in terms of score, because I do agree that Billy Bob Thornton gave the exact performance they wanted him to, but I hate how they wrote the performance they want to give him.
Fair.
I don't know where to put that. I'm just going to shoot the middle, though. Not really the middle, slightly above that, but I'm going to give this a 3.
Yeah.
Because Frances McDormand, Gandolfini, others, great performances. Yes. Billy Bob Thornton physically was in this movie and listed in the credits as such.
Yes.
And finally, Kyle, what is your rewatchability?
I give this a 3. I think I could lean lower, but because I did like the movie a lot, I'm going to give it a 3. I will not be rushing out to this movie to rewatch it again, but I can't confidently say that I'll never watch this again because I did like it. And I do think I do want to do like a full Coen's watch, like a marathon. So I feel like I'll get through them again.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to give this a 1. I don't want to watch this again. If we were to do a full Coen's run through, I would put a box over my head specifically during the entire runtime of this movie so I could not hear or watch it because looking and hearing at nothing would be better. Kyle, that's going to bring your score to 15 out of 20 for a 75%.
Yeah.
Very in line with the critics. And this can bring mine to 9.5 out of 20 for a 48%. Out of line with the critics, but I stand by my thoughts. But now it's ranking time, and Kyle, I'm going to hit you with your rankings right now.
Sure.
Lord of the Rings, Amelie, Donnie Darko, Memento, Royal Tenenbaum, Shrek, Training Day, Ocean's 11, Harry Potter, Sexy Beast, The Others, Black Hawk Down, Mulholland Drive, Hedwig, Spy Kids, Monsters Ball, Gosford Park, In the Bedroom, Ghost World, and Moulin Rouge. Where does The Man Who Wasn't There fall into this?
It is going to be my new number 10 under Harry Potter over Sexy Beast.
All right. Well, for my ranking, fortunately, Billy Bob can hang out with himself. He's got some company down here. This is going to be... Oh, maybe that's too mean. Nope. It's going to be my new number 20, just above Monster's Ball and below Ghost World. Oh, I keep my Billy Bob's in a row.
The one fatal error that this movie has is it doesn't have something as iconic as "some call it a sling blade."
I know.
I call it a Kaiser blade.
It ain't got no gas in it. I think that's my number one complaint with this movie. You're sitting there bored as shit because it ain't got no gas in it. That's going to bring my ranking to Lord of the Rings, Donnie Darko, Amelie, Royal Tenenbaum, Shrek, Training Day, Memento, The Others, Sexy Beast, Harry Potter, Moulin Rouge, Ocean's 11, Black Hawk Down, In the Bedroom, Mulholland Drive, Hedwig, Spy Kids, Gosford Park, Ghost World, The Man Who Wasn't There, and then Monsters Ball, the Billy Bob Zone. Well, is it time for some fun Letterboxd reviews, Kyle?
Oh, it's time.
This has a 3.8 out of 5 on Letterboxd, and this is not my own personal bias. There are more negative reviews than positive reviews, but that's because the positive reviews are all Coen Brothers film nerds, so they're all analyses of the film and how it made them feel and their perspective and what was good about this movie. What's funny are the other reviews, but we do start with one good one. So Karen H., 5 stars. Billy Bob Thornton could bench press a car with an eyebrow.
Nice.
This was a middle of the road review, so I tried to still find higher ones. This is not Chris Nolan. 2 stars. Billy Bob Thornton cuts hair and chuffs cigs in a cheeky noir that's a little long.
Yes. That's that's a great description of this.
Now for the rest of the good reviews that are down in the dumps. Renetta Garecki, 1 star. Billy Bob Thornton has only one face. And now I understand that that is a comment about his like range in this movie, but that's just kind of funny to write down. Like, Billy Bob Thornton, one face. There's not two. There's not another one hiding beneath his hair on the back end.
I mean, a sling blade, he's got his chin forward. So that's a different sort of face.
That's true. He has 2 faces.
He has 2 faces.
Yeah, it's too bad both suck.
2 faces.
Callum, 1.5 stars. Billy Bob Thornton is like the less critically acclaimed version of Daniel Day-Lewis. I didn't even realize that all of these are about Billy Bob Thornton specifically. That just happened to be.
It's hard to come away with this without commenting on Billy Bob Thornton.
I know, he's so easy to comment on. And lastly, this one's not about Billy Bob Thornton. This does, I think, adequately sum up a lot of how I feel about this movie. D, 1.5 stars. Well, at least Frances was there.
God, she makes everything better. I'm so glad that she's married to one of the Coens. I forget which one.
I feel like if you're married to one, you're married to both. Yeah, like, exactly. They probably don't leave the same room ever unless it's together.
It's like how on IMDb they list the one director, but for Frances McDormand, it's like spouses Joel Coen, but in brackets Ethan Coen.
Frances McDormand, married to Joel Coen, produced by Ethan Coen. All right, this is time for awards.
Oh boy.
Kyle, take a stab at it. What do you think this was nominated for at the Academy Awards?
Well, I'll tell you that I know the exact award it was nominated for. It was cinematography.
Ooh, that's wrong. It was for best cinematography.
Well,
not just that it had some present in the movie. However, it did not win, so maybe it was just it had cinematography.
Yeah.
Other notable awards, this won the BAFTA for best cinematography.
Okay.
Most of the award tension was for its cinematography.
Yeah.
I don't blame them. The events were less interesting of the movie than what they shot them with.
Mm-hmm.
This was also nominated for 3 Golden Globes, best motion picture drama, best screenplay, and best actor for Billy Bob Thornton. It didn't win any of them.
Makes sense. I also feel like this movie probably didn't get seen by anybody.
No.
And like, which makes sense with its low budget. So I'm wondering if it might have done better if it had more eyes on it. Awards wise.
Yeah.
But like, I think there was probably enough people passionately behind it for its cinematography, or enough people that saw, hey, Roger Deakins shot this.
Yeah.
He's always good. Let's put him in there.
And I think even trying to be somewhat objective.
Yeah.
I don't know if this movie needs other nominations because this isn't a big acting role for Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah.
Frances McDormand's just not in enough to make me really that perturbed by her not getting any supporting
right.
kind of nods. Again, with Gandolfini, he's not really in much of this. True. I feel like you're hard-pressed to find another nomination from it, even if it does get more attention.
I would consider screenplay.
Yeah, I think that is fair.
But I don't know if I could nominate Billy Bob for this.
No.
I don't know if Best Picture is something, like, even in a year of 10, I don't know if it would still be probably outside of it for me.
Yeah. Well, time for some interesting facts. In his 2017 book, The Coen Brothers, Ian Nathan reports that Joel Coen called Billy Bob Thornton to say the brothers had a film for him. What's it about? That's my Billy Bob Thornton voice. Thornton asked. It's about a barber who wants to be in the dry cleaning business, was the reply. I'll take it, said Thornton, who had been a longtime fan of the Coens, having famously remarked, they just don't suck. Unlike me, Billy Bob Thornton. I added half of that comment. Billy Bob Thornton jokingly made it look like Ed Crane had an erection in one of the scenes where he's watching Bertie Abundez playing the piano. Only one of the prop guys noticed during production. When the Coen brothers later found out, they made it clear that Ed would not be aroused in the scene.
What do you even do in that scenario as the prop guy that notices this? Do you walk over to Billy Bob and say, hey, man, calm down.
Well, in Billy Bob Thornton's defense, they wanted his character to be stiff.
That's good.
When Ed Crane is at the French piano teacher studio, Jacques Sarkinogis.
Good try. Not power really. Through.
The actor portraying him, Adam Alexi-Mali, plays the opening of the Piano Concerto No. 1 by Franz Liszt. This was unplanned and spontaneous during one of the takes during shooting, as Joel Coen and Ethan Coen were unaware that Adam was in fact an accomplished concert pianist.
Which is weird, because how did that never come up?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going for this, like, basically a bit part, like it's a small role, like one scene, and it's about him being a concert pianist, you don't think you would mention, like, oh yeah, I actually used to do this.
Yeah, you don't think you'd be like, oh, hey guys, you want me to just do a little ditty on here?
Yeah. Weird.
That is weird. That worked out, though. I didn't even realize that he wasn't brought in for his ability to play piano, exactly. Because he plays it quite well in his 20-second scene. But that is all that I have for fun facts galore and other review material. Kyle, do you have any parting words for the man who wasn't there?
No.
That's fair. I wish this movie wasn't there. That's mine. Oh, wait, no, one more.
Okay.
This movie sucked.
All right, well, I want to thank you all for listening to Season 3, Episode 21 of Snubs and Dubs. As always, you can find us everywhere on social media at Snubs and Dubs. That's on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Letterboxd, etc. We're also on Good Pod, so make sure to check us out there and join our official Discord. We'd love to hear your guys' thoughts on the man who wasn't there or on this episode, so please send us a tweet or a message with a question, recommendation, or anything else. I'm also at Kyle Tobias on Twitter, and Jason's at Winnie_Mills. Of course, all of those links will be in the show notes. Make sure to leave a 5-star review, share the show to everyone you know, and check back next week for another episode. Here's a sneak peek of the film we're going to talk about.
His name is David.
I feel it. That's creepy.
Whoa. You're so real.
In a distant future, in an age of intelligent machines, he is the first robotic child programmed to love.
That's right. Next time we're talking about Steven Spielberg's AI, artificial intelligence. So make sure to watch it before next episode. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Thanks for listening. That's a wrap. Bye.
Bye for now.